I want to talk this morning about this idea of the new default platform. So what does that mean? Well, first, what does the word default mean? We all have defaults, don't we? Defaults are how we do something when we're not thinking about how we do it. You've got a default place you sit at dinner with your family, don't you? I'm sure you do. You've got a default for, I don't know, how you get dressed in the morning. Shirt first, socks first, whatever. You have defaults for how you do your job. If you're a developer, you have default technologies that you go to build your next new app. If you're an IT pro, you have a default approach to managing systems and applications. If you're an IT leader, you've got a default sense of how you want to advance and evolve your data center. We all have defaults. We have to. Without defaults, we've got to rethink things all the time. We can't do that. Defaults are fundamental. What I want to talk about, though, is the fact that we are seeing the emergence of a new default platform for enterprise IT. And to think about that, let me start by asking you this. What do you think? What do you think were the three most important events in enterprise IT in the last dozen years or so? We might disagree, but here are my choices. Here are what I believe were the three most important events in enterprise IT in the last dozen years or so. Number one, the IPO of Salesforce.com. Why? Because their successful IPO showed the world that the idea of cloud applications, software as a service, SaaS, worked as both a technology and, crucially, as a business. Key event number two. This was very quiet, almost invisible. It was the initial release of Amazon Web Services quite a while ago, back in 2006. Why is that so important? Because it was the beginning of public cloud platforms. And key event number three was perhaps the single most hyped thing in our industry ever. Remember it? It was the launch of the iPhone. The iPhone, I would suggest, is what gave us the notion of mobile as a platform. Not just a phone, but a full-fledged platform for building and running arbitrary applications. Those three events were so important because they're the foundation of the new default platform. They're the seeds from which the new default enterprise IT platform has grown. Now, before I talk more about that, one key thing to notice. Did Microsoft do any of those? Well, no, actually. Did IBM do any of those? No. Did VMware? No. Oracle? No. HP? No. Any enterprise vendor? No. All of these came from somewhat surprising places. But that's how it is, isn't it? That's how these kinds of big changes almost always happen. They come from nowhere and affect the mainstream, and they have truly affected the mainstream. Because look at this. Traditionally, enterprise IT had as clients PCs and laptops. We all ran our own data centers, inside which we have packaged apps that we purchase, like SAP or Exchange or whatever, and custom apps that we build. That is the classic default enterprise IT platform, is it not? Unless you're a startup, I would suggest that all of you in this room have this in your world right now, because this has been the default platform for decades. But it's over. And it's over because of the three events I just talked about. It is those three events that have made this change, that were the seeds from which the change grew. Because now, the new default looks like this. Clients, of course, still include PCs and laptops, but obviously phones and tablets, mobile devices matter a great deal. A change kicked off, I would suggest, by the iPhone. For packaged applications, rather than buy apps that you run in your own organization, don't you today at least look for a SaaS solution? More and more organizations, rather than buying and running their own apps, prefer SaaS. The success of SaaS begins with Salesforce. And finally, for new customers, more and more, you'll build those new custom apps not in your own data center, but rather on public cloud platforms. A change kicked off by Amazon Web Services. This, I would suggest to you, is what the new default platform looks like. Now, I'm not saying that you're going to move all your current stuff onto this world. You'll move some of it, perhaps. What I am saying is it's the new default. So that when you build a new app, when you buy a new solution, it is to this world that you will look, typically. Now, the truth, of course, is more complex, right? The truth is that our world looks more like this. Most of us still have a large investment in the conventional on-premises world, absolutely. Many of us, probably this room, most of you, are at least dipping your toes into the new default platform in the cloud. And the notion of the new default for all kinds of diverse clients has been with us for some time. So the reality is that going forward, even today, our world looks like this. But the center of gravity, the thing that pulls us toward the future, the new default, is the upper right of this diagram. It is the diverse clients. And so, today you've heard in the previous keynotes about a whole bunch of things. I'm going to revisit many of those things, but I'm going to suggest pretty much all of them can be seen as aspects of this new default platform. And a useful way to think about them, at least I think, is through the lens provided by this perspective. Before I do that, though, I've got to come back to something you just heard about, because there's this big barrier. You just spent half an hour hearing about that barrier. The barrier is trust. The barrier is trust. I've given, at this point, hundreds of talks on cloud computing in, I don't know, 50 countries around the world. Every talk, every city, every time, this always comes up. Always. Even today. People are concerned about trust in the cloud. The truth, of course, as most of you know, is that big firms like Microsoft, Amazon, Google, are much more effective than most of us at securing data centers. But still, the truth here is that people just aren't rational about trust. They're not. It's an emotional thing. I'll talk to CIOs who will say, David, I would never put my critical business data in the public cloud. And then they'll send me important documents via OneDrive or Dropbox, which run, of course, in the cloud. Or here's my favorite example. My favorite example of the irrationality of trust. Ask yourself this. What is the world's most dangerous technology? What is the world's scariest technology? Is it nuclear weapons? Is it some computer virus that will destroy all our systems? No. The world's scariest technology is actually Windows Update. Think about it. Every Patch Tuesday, Microsoft puts whatever code they feel like in our operating systems, and we say, install? How do we know the last update, the next one, won't steal all our data? We don't. We trust Microsoft. We have huge trust in Microsoft, which they have earned over the years. Now, just to be clear, I'm joking. I'm not suggesting Windows Update is actually dangerous or scary, because it's not. What I am suggesting, however, is that this trust barrier that limits so much of what we do with cloud computing isn't really fundamentally rational. We already have so much trust in our vendors that what Azure asks of us, what cloud platforms, cloud apps ask of us, is not that different, not even beyond what's asked of us today by things like Windows Update. So I do not think this is a huge barrier. I expect to see a world where we one day treat cloud platforms, cloud applications with as much trust as we do Windows Update. We're getting there very quickly. So this morning, we've heard about a lot of things. And there are many aspects of this default platform to talk about. In keeping with the theme so far today, I want to try to wrap things together a little bit. I'm going to talk about data in the new default first. So a few minutes on data. Now, in this new default platform, data is everywhere, right? It's in the existing infrastructure, it's in the cloud, it's on mobile devices, data is everywhere. There's lots we could talk about here. Throughout the morning, if there's any single technology that's appeared in most of the talks, machine learning. Let's focus on that for a second. In the new default platform, in the Microsoft view of the world, which is relevant to us since this is a Microsoft event, machine learning fits up here. Part of the public cloud platform, part of Azure, the technology is Azure Machine Learning. And here's the thing. Machine learning is really important. It's a fundamental part of this new default. And yet, I wonder how many of us really know what machine learning means. I'm going to take 5 minutes and tell you. Ready? Here we go. It's not hard. First of all, what does it mean to learn? What does it mean to learn? When you learned to read as a child, what did you do? Well, let's see. You learned to recognize letters, A, B, C, and then words, mom, dad, cat, dog. You recognize what exactly? Well, patterns. The pattern that forms an A, when you saw it again, you knew that was an A. The pattern that formed the word mom, mom, and the pattern you see it again. Learning is very much about recognizing patterns. Let's think about that same idea in a somewhat different context. Suppose I want to do this. I want to build software that can identify credit card transactions that might be fraudulent. How would I do that? Well, I can start with some data, and I can search that data for patterns that indicate fraudulent transactions. Then later on, when I see those same patterns in new transactions, I can know, ah, that's probably fraudulent. It's the same idea as recognizing the letter A you learned as a child. Find the pattern, recognize it later on. Great, how do we do that? Well, look at this. Here's some data about credit card transactions. Some names, some amounts, whether they're fraudulent or not. What's the pattern? What's the pattern? Well, it's obvious, isn't it? If your name starts with P, you're a criminal. Easy, right? Well, so here's the problem. If I have a little bit of data, as I do here, I can find patterns very easily. But those patterns are probably wrong. Suppose I got more data. Suppose I've got this. Now, where's the pattern? Well, it's evident that people's names start with P aren't all criminals because Polly is in here, and Polly's no criminal. But what is the pattern? Well, it turns out there actually is one. You could all find it in a few minutes if I gave you some time. There is a pattern here you could find. But suppose you're hunting for a pattern that indicates fraudulent transactions, and you don't have 10 records with 6 fields each. You have 10 million records with 60 fields each. Could you find that pattern? Of course not. People can't do that. But software can. And that's what machine learning does. It searches data to find patterns. It looks like this. You start by choosing the right data. That can be hard. It can be really hard. What data is relevant to indicating whether a transaction is fraudulent? Well, some things are obvious. Some things maybe aren't. Does the weather matter? Do holidays matter? Choosing the right data can be really hard. Once you have the data, it's probably full of issues. Data is always messy, right? Missing values and replicated stuff and so on. So you want to take some time to do pre-processing to the data. There's various kinds of pre-processing modules you might use to get rid of duplicates, do all kinds of things like that. When you're happy with your data, you can then start looking for patterns. And you do that using what are commonly called machine learning algorithms. Those are mostly about statistics, things like regressions. Ways to look for patterns in data. In fact, some people describe machine learning as the intersection of computer science and statistics. Not a bad way to think about it. The result of all of this is something called a model. A model is code. It is code with an API, potentially. And once you've got a model that you like, you iterate here, do this several times. Once you like your model, you can then deploy the model and make it invocable by applications. The whole point of this is to help build smarter applications. That is the goal. Because now that model has built into it software that can recognize the pattern you found that indicates a likely fraudulent transaction. Machine learning in three easy slides. So what does Azure Machine Learning bring to the party? Well, same basic process. It supplies a bunch of these nice pre-processing modules. It includes a bunch of machine learning algorithms. It includes a nice way to deploy things and access them. That's very important. Deployment can be hard otherwise. And it has this nice tool called Azure ML to drive this whole process. There you have it. Azure Machine Learning in 5 minutes. You should know about this, because machine learning is a key part of the new default platform. Another aspect of this new default platform is how we deploy these things, how we actually use these things. Here's a quick scenario. Suppose I've got a bunch of data stored in Azure Blobs about historical credit card transactions. I can then use Azure ML, as I just showed you, to process that data to create a model. Then credit card customers, as they use their credit cards, can have that processed by some kind of application that handles payments. That payment app then calls into the model. That's the idea. That's the scenario. That's the picture of how this looks. Not complex. Conceptually simple, surprisingly useful, especially as the world gets more and more data about more and more people, places, and things. And speaking of things, it's obvious, I think, from what's gone before today, that this notion of IoT is also an aspect of the new default platform. And here's a way to think about IoT in this context. The things in IoT, the T part, are effectively clients. Different kinds of clients. They generate lots of data that must be processed by applications probably running in the cloud. The cloud makes so much sense for IoT processing. It's always accessible. It's very scalable. The cloud is a natural fit to build applications that process IoT data. And so, in the Azure world, there are various technologies for doing this. Suppose you have, for example, a bunch of devices, whatever they might be. They send streaming data into the Azure world. There's this thing called Azure IoT Hub, announced quite recently, that lets you accept all of this incoming data, buffer it for later processing by something called Azure Stream Analytics. In his keynote earlier before me today, Scott Guthrie demoed this a little bit. Other choices are here as well. Microsoft supports Spark for doing this, a bunch of other things in Azure. The result there might be to tell some application that some of those devices need maintenance, need repair, need attention. You can inform business users to go do that. Great. You might be looking for anomalies, as Scott showed this morning, in the data coming from those devices. Super. Obvious question, though, how do we know what qualifies as an anomaly? How do we know? Well, let's see. We have lots of data. We're looking for patterns that will generate indications of upcoming failure. Looking for patterns. Well, that's Azure ML, right? So maybe the data that comes in is stored in this thing called Data Lake, a big unstructured storage mechanism, kind of like blobs. I can then process that using Azure ML, produce a model, stream analytics, call the model directly. So these parts fit together. The things you heard about this morning, IoT, machine learning, they're all aspects, I would suggest, of this new default platform, and they fit together in useful ways. That's important. So what do you need to do? Here are my suggestions. Look at your environment. Look at your world. Figure out when machine learning can help you. For what kinds of scenarios? What kinds of things? Maybe cows, as Scott discussed earlier today. Figure out where IoT makes sense. What can you instrument? How can you use that data? And finally, reset your defaults. What that actually means is two things. It means changing how you think, first of all, and then even more important, more fundamental, it means changing how you act, what you actually do. Let me talk quickly about two more aspects of this new default platform. How about management? How about management? Think about, for example, identity. In the traditional world of identity, what do? Well, we have pieces at laptops, we have apps inside our network perimeter, that's our conventional world, we use Active Directory. Wonderful, great, it works. In that world, we also have to manage client devices, which conventionally were PCs and laptops. What do? Most of you, I suspect, are using Config Manager to do that. Classic solutions designed, deployed widely in the traditional default platform. But in the new world, which looks like this, you still need those things. They're useful, they're helpful, but they're no longer remotely enough to solve the problems. We still need a way to do, for example, single sign-on to all of those cloud applications. And so you see things like Azure Active Directory emerge that lets you do SSO to all those cloud apps while still connecting to your on-premises world. Similarly, we have to manage not just devices inside our network, our perimeter, but mobile devices. And so things like Intune arise there, which must also link to the existing on-prem solutions like Config Manager. And there's more. All this stuff Microsoft packages together in this thing called EMS, Enterprise Mobility Suite. But really, what EMS is a response to the emergence of the new default platform. And so, if you work in this space, what do you need to do? Well, get your mind around network identity, cloud identity. And for most of you, I suspect that's going to mean Azure Active Directory. And the reason is that Azure AD has very few serious competitors today. If you're interested in this general topic, I'm doing a talk this afternoon in this room that compares Azure to its competitors. We'll talk more about that. But Azure AD looks like it's going to be the main solution in this space, just as Active Directory is today on premises. For managing your devices, also cloud-based solutions are very much the way forward, it appears. What does that mean? Well, you know, you got to reset your defaults. Change how you think, change how you act. And one more example. Maybe you're a developer. What does it mean to build apps in this new default platform? Well, it means a variety of things. I'm choosing to focus on just a piece of the story, the piece of writing the server side on public cloud platforms. Again, you can focus across this whole space, but really more and more of your logic is going to run up there. So, as you think about building apps in this new world, in the Azure environment, you've got a bunch of choices here. Azure gives you three main categories today to think about. If you want to view it, two categories, three subsets. There's IaaS, basic raw VMs, and the thing called Azure Virtual Machines. If you're a masochist and enjoy pain, build your apps directly on raw VMs. Okay, great. Alternatively, there are these PaaS solutions, Platform as a Service. And there are two PaaS technologies going forward in Azure today. There's also Cloud Services, the existing one. There's two new ones, newer ones. There is Azure Service Fabric, which is designed for microservice-based applications. If you like the idea of microservices, especially if you're an ISV, you should care about that. For enterprise developers, the strongest solution for most of what you're doing will probably be the other PaaS option, which is called App Service. The way to think about these is that as you move right in this diagram, you get more productivity. It's easier and faster to build apps. As you move left, you get more control. So again, if you want to build on bare metal, bare VMs, that's an IaaS approach, which is not always stupid, believe me. It's a joke earlier, right? So I'm going to talk a little bit about one of these, which is the Rightmost. This is mostly an enterprise event. And so if you're an enterprise developer building apps, going forward, the technology you probably most want to use, most want to focus on, is App Service. So what do you want to do? Well, with App Service, you want to build applications that target diverse clients, browsers, mobile devices, other apps. And those applications will run on some PaaS platform. On Azure, it may well be App Service. App Service provides a set of services that you as a developer can take advantage of. They include some pretty basic things, support for building application logic in .NET or Java or JavaScript or PHP or other things. They include authentication using a variety of techniques, Azure Active Directory, Facebook, a bunch more. They include access to databases like SQL Database, like a MongoDB service, like DocumentDB. Support for those is built in to App Service. You also have support for things that have meaning for mobile apps, syncing offline data, sending push notifications. There's support for doing exposing APIs, API metadata with Swagger. There's support for building workflows. If you want to do some kind of long-running process for integration, there's support for that. And there's generalized support for the things that all your apps want, scalability, deployment, diagnostics. You can choose which of those services you want to use in a given application. To make life easier for developers, Microsoft has defined several categories of apps for which they give you templates. This was actually shown in Scott's talk this morning very briefly. But the notion is this: if you want to build a classic web app, browser, authentication, logic, data, there is this template for a web app that essentially plugs in for you the purple services and the ones down below to build a basic web app. If your app is more a mobile type app, there's a mobile app template that plugs in the purple services and the blue ones, push, offline sync. There's a template for API apps, there's one for workflow apps, and of course, you are free to do whatever you want. You are not required to use those four categories. They're just easy to start with groupings of PaaS services. So the notion here is that App Service provides a set of useful functions, capabilities, that you can relatively easily drop into your application. That's the idea. So if you're a developer, what do you need to do? Figure out whether you want to use IaaS or PaaS. PaaS is often the best choice for new apps. There's less work, you can deploy faster, and because you've got less to configure, you've got less to screw up, and there are fewer risks. Once you've done that, work out which PaaS technology you want. For enterprise apps, it will probably more often be App Service. For ISVs, look at Service Fabric, although even some enterprises and ISVs might switch there. It's not frozen in stone. And so finally, as an enterprise developer, what do you have to do? You know, right? You know. Reset your defaults. Change how you think. Change how you act. So there is a new default platform for enterprise IT. Everything's changing at once. The server side, the client side, management. It's an enormous change. It's an enormous change. This level of change happens so rarely in our industry. But it's happening right now. Well, we're alive and active in the field. Aren't we lucky? We are so lucky. It is such a great time to be in this industry. It's a really great time. You'd be learning new things. The aspects of this platform we're focused on today include things like machine learning and IoT, getting in the cloud, new PaaS technologies. But you know, right? It's a good thing. This is how progress happens. This, in fact, is what progress means. So, my last thought, my final suggestion for all of you, you know what it's going to be, don't you? It's time to reset your defaults. For you, for me, for all of us, to change how we think, and most of all, to change how we act.